Now the fun begins.
Bridget.
Stop! You violated the law.
Welcome back to another episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course, PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So, of course, like I tell you every week, be sure to subscribe to us, rate us, review us, interact with us wherever you get your podcasts at, of course, and follow us on Twitter at GPGC Podcast to stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games alike, and our dope giveaways. I'm your host, as always, Travis White, aka Travelus, on most internet platforms. Joining me once again, finally, back in action, back in the saddle, as they say, my partner in crime, Mike Peapack. Mike, my friend, it's been a couple weeks since we talked, so what is good? What is going on? In the past couple of weeks, as you've been MIA, I've been MIA, we've been fucking all over the place. I mean, not you and I. You know what I mean. words and phrases there. You got to watch where you put them. What have you been up to, man? And what have you been playing?
For me, not a whole lot has changed in life. I've just been playing mostly Valorant recently because the season's almost over. Mm-hmm. And just ranked, climbing in ranked just to kind of make it a point to be able to get to Immortal before the end of the season. So currently in Ascendant 2, working my way. I just need to get through the rest of Ascendant 2 and then Diamond 3 or Ascendant 3. And then I'll be going up into Immortal. So I just need to grind a little bit more. The season's over in like 7 days. So once I'm done doing that, I'll probably quit playing it for a long time again. Because I think the last time I played was like over a year ago. So yeah, it'll be fun if I can achieve it.
It's funny too that you bring that up, like that naturally, you saying like, fuck, I'm back on the Valorant train a little bit, just as something to play while I was on my trip. I was like, god, I kind of want to play Valorant when I get home a little bit, like, and naturally once I booted up and I'm getting like, ah, that's why I haven't played in a while, like, ah,
yeah,
yes. And then I booted up CS and I'm like, you know, CS isn't in a great spot, but this is a much more enjoyable experience. But at the same time, though, like, it made me really, like, reminisce on when that game first fucking came out, like, right when the pandemic was, like, heating up and starting, and that came out in that April. Like, I was fucking enamored with Valorant for, like, a solid, like, 2 months. Like, that was the only game I played for 2 months, probably. And, mm-hmm. like, the beta version of that game, to me, was so fucking fun. Like, granted, a lot less content, and I get that. But at the same time, too, I feel like just some of the fucking agents that are in that game are just either way too OP. They need to be nerfed to hell and back. Some need to be buffed. But then, like, it's always hard finding, like, a balance for, you know, multiplayer games, especially competitive multiplayer games. But at the same time, though, like, it just doesn't, like, I'm all for, like, experimenting and trying new things to make, like, try to find new interesting gameplay mechanics to, you know, incorporate into the game and whatnot. But, like, just some of the agents to me feel fucking just way too OP. Like, I don't know. Maybe that's just me, but.
Nah, there's definitely some agents in the game that probably need some nerf. And then there's probably some that need a buff. But, like, right now, I think the most OP agent in the game is probably Fade, just mm-hmm. because her utility is so much to deal with. It's pretty annoying. Chamber was probably the most OP character, and they nerfed him, and now Fade is just, like, far and away the best agent in the game. Like, if you don't have a Fade on your team in ranked, you're going to be having a hard time because of her dogs and everything. So, mm-hmm. yeah, I definitely think that they always have trouble balancing agents, but that's kind of the problem with playing a game where either new champions, whether it be like League, new agents, mm-hmm. new gods and Smite, like any game that has this type of thing, like even Rainbow Six Siege, like it's all, you know, it all can be a little bit problematic in that regard, because you kind of, it's like in your company's best interest to make the new agent OP, mm-hmm. because you want people to, you know, buy your shit, right. like buy your new agents and stuff. But at the end of the day, it still doesn't make it any less like kind of brutal whenever, you know, they're having trouble balancing shit.
Mm-hmm. No, and that's like the thing that I think irritates me the most is like there's some that they put in there. Like I like Killjoy a lot. I like what's her name? Like Chamber. I've seen a decent amount of gameplay on, and like, yeah, parts of him could be a little OP, but like there's a few that like have popped up, but like I'll never like Reyna. I'll never like even like Euro or Sky even too, debatably, like, but more so like the game stopped being fun at like, or at least to me, like when I'm all for like having like realistically in games like this where it's class based hero shooters for the most part, except for this is, you know, with a tactical shooter component to it. But like every character should have a counter. Like it should be just layered in terms of like if you're playing Brimstone, you know, I'm just throwing champs out there. No, I have no idea if this is the counter for it. But if you're playing Brimstone, Omen should counter it because of this ability. If you're playing Viper, Killjoy should counter it because of this ability. Like, whereas if you're playing, you know, Sage, you could counter Killjoy because of this ability. Like, it should all like balance out at the end of it. And I just really don't think it does with some of these agents. I still fucking like playing the game, like at times, like I have that like itch that like last night I played the game because I was like, I really don't know what the fuck I want to play. I just want to play a video game right now. So I booted it up like just unrated in Valorant. And I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'll play a game of that. And like, even though I wasn't like really trying or anything like that, like I still had fun at the end of it. Like I was like, this is a map that I've never played before. I'm just fucking going in and giving it the old college try and like just using my, you know, game sense from, you know, either early Valorant or just playing CS, like, and just gonna see how that goes. And like still ended up having a good time, but it's when you get into certain situations with some of the abilities, and like I have that problem with Overwatch, a game I love, that just some of them are just like, this just seems like unfairly like unbalanced. Like this just doesn't seem fun. Like this doesn't make the game fun. I don't know.
Yeah.
If that makes any sense, that's just rambling, but.
Yeah, there's a few agents that are definitely problematic, and they're supposed to basically kind of counter each other, mm-hmm. I guess, in a way. I would say, like, more so, like, basically Killjoy and some of the other more suppressive agents, the counter to them is KO with his dagger to be able to like silence them. Mm. And then his ult will also silence them. So, I mean, yeah, there's counterplay, but they're also like for a long time there, there was no counterplay to Chamber really. Mm-hmm. And now I'm having a hard time finding a way to counter Fade because of her utility is just so strong mm-hmm. and so good. So yeah, I mean, it does seem like every so often that like, there's just, you know, agents that come out that are very, very tough to deal with. And I mean, even to a certain extent, you know, you made a comment about Sky, and like, yeah, Sky's super hard to deal with because her flashes regenerate. So if she uses a flash at the beginning of the round and so say you're playing Haven and mm-hmm. your Sky is playing A and your Sky flashes into A. And like, if she doesn't get a confirmation that she blinded people, then they're probably not going A, and then she gets another flash in 30 seconds, which she can use to flash mm-hmm. or, you know, use to get more info. So, like, yeah, there are those types of things that happen. And, I mean, Valorant's still, in tactical FPS world, it's still a long way behind CS, and I don't think it'll ever catch it. Mm-hmm. I think the floor to playing CS is lower than Valorant. I think it's easier to, like, play CS just at the basic level, because at the end of the day, you're just, like, shooting and everything.
Right, it's a much more straightforward experience.
Yeah, and I think the abilities and everything definitely raise the floor on Valorant, mm-hmm. but I also think it puts a hard cap on, like, where the skill ceiling can really go. So that's my thoughts on it. And I just still don't think they have a good map in the rotation, which is mm-hmm. also another problem. So, yeah, I mean, it's good and it's bad. So
there were a few times where like I went, I had a 1v4 and ended up actually, like, acing it, but it was, well, not acing, but you know what I mean, clutching. But I ran out of time to, like, try to get the bomb defused, and it was, yeah. like, just enough time that it was, like, I'm probably not going to get this. Like,
yeah.
like I know timers, like, I could tell I'm not going to get this, and, like, people in, like, or I'll have, like, team chat be like, dude, why aren't you even trying? Why aren't you even trying? Blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, one, there's not enough time. I'm not, I'm carrying an operator right now. Like, I'm not going to drop that because of the econ that's going on right now. And two, I don't think you understand how little I care if we win or lose really playing unrated. Like, it doesn't matter. This does not matter. This is me playing the game for the first time in, like, 12 months or so, like, 14 months maybe. Like, I'm just trying to get back into, like, get the feel of game sense again. Like, I just don't care. Like, yes, I want to win, but at the end of the day, like, okay, this isn't going to work. I'm just going to save and, like, so I can keep, like, working on, like, you know, things that I can eventually transition into playing, you know, ranked playlist again. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. People just get so in, like, so jammed up over stuff. And at the end of the day, I kind of get it, but at the same time, too, like, we got people dodging in, like, unrated playlist too, on top of that. I have a hard time, like, really getting serious about Valorant in that regard. Like, when, like, oh, I didn't get my agent, like, and I don't want to play anybody else in an unranked playlist, like, I'm dodging. And it's like, this isn't fun. I don't want to sit here for fucking 20 minutes trying to get a game, like.
Yeah.
But, anywho. On my end, though, in terms of stuff I'm playing, was on my trip. But it, like I kind of talked about last week whenever I was doing my like one-on-one therapy session with myself on the show, I talked about how, like, on the trip, my big thing was I wanted to take my Steam Deck, try that out, kind of soak that in for a little bit. And I did, for the most part. I didn't play a ton of stuff, but a lot of shorter things. The main thing that I did want to play was Stray. So I was able to play that, played through it. I really dug it, and I'm surprised, like, it is very much an Adam Marsh game, just obviously from the brunt of it being a cat game. Like, it is fully, like, I'm like, this is very much Adam's shit, just from the sense and the tone of the game on top of that, but also, too, it's just, it's cats, and my boy loves cats, and there's nothing absolutely wrong with it. He's got a dope cat. But I was shocked that, like, every time I bring it up, like, I'm like, dude, have you played Stray? He's like, I haven't really touched it. I'm like,
yeah.
But I really, really liked it. It wasn't as deep as I thought it would be in terms of the narrative, in terms of kind of how it approaches. Like, it is very much, I want to say, like, it is very much a walking simulator for the most part, with some stealth elements and whatnot. But it is the most realistic cat simulator you can get. Like, or I would say it's probably the most realistic animal simulator that you can get out there. Not just cats, but just across the board with animals. That I haven't played a video game that, like, emulates, you know, playing as an or taking control of an animal in the way that that does, in such a very fluid and just realistic fashion. Everything feels real with it. They really got the mocap and the animations and just the fluidity of that game, like, down pat. They got that perfect. But, like I said, I was hoping for maybe a little bit deeper of an experience, but it did have a cool... That's not to say that it isn't worth somebody, you know, picking up and playing it. It was, like, maybe, I don't know, 4 hours or so, five, you know, tops. I think I had, like, 6 hours on my playtime because I also, like, went idle for a little bit and whatnot. But really, and the reason why I was saving it was for, hey, I have a 5-hour flight, you know, one way of our trip. I'm going to at least play it on that. And it is a perfect plane game. Like, it really, that is, you got, you know, if you're on a trip or something like that, and you're able to play this in handheld with a Steam Deck or something like that, I would be shocked if it doesn't eventually come to something like Switch. In terms of consoles, it's a console exclusive on PS5. But I would be very shocked if we don't eventually see it make its way to all platforms. I would imagine that's much more of a timed exclusivity, but I really recommend it if you can get it in a portable fashion on the Steam Deck. But at the same time, too, it's a fun, like, you could sit down and play this in one night, probably, like, pretty easily. If you just sit there and, you know, in one sitting, you could probably do it. But I really enjoyed it. Like I said, just wasn't as deep as I thought. But there were some tender moments in it that I was like, all right, you're pulling the heartstrings a little bit. Like, I'm fucking caring about this cat now. I'm not the biggest cat person in the world. I have nothing against them, but, like, I'm very much more a dog person. But I'm like, goddamn, I'd do anything for this cat at this point. Like, so, yeah, definitely recommend that. Check it out. And then another game that I thought would be really easy to kind of just, hey, it's at night, you know, we've been out all day on our cruise, like, on an excursion or whatever, like, you know, it's like 10 o'clock at night and we're just dead. Molly's going to bed. Like, something that I could just kind of play that I played that I have probably played before, you know, that I can just turn my mind off and just have a good time. And I ended up playing through Arkham Asylum again. And it was another one of those games that I just wanted to test on the Steam Deck. I'm like, this game is fucking came out in 2009, I want to say. So 2009 or early 2010, one of the two. I think it was late 2009. So we're talking like a 13-year-old game at this point. You got to think it's going to run quite well on the Steam Deck. And really, it does. Like, locked 60... Yeah, it was locked. Locked 60 frames, buttery smooth. And it was like barely... The Steam Deck felt... It really was making no sound whatsoever. It ran really smoothly. It wasn't hard on the hardware. Whereas, like, Stray was like... Like, you could feel the fucking heat coming off the Steam Deck. Like, yeah. Those fans were fucking cooking. It was like the equivalent of, like, playing Red Dead 2 on that thing. Like, it was fucking cooking. But it was nice to jump back into something that I knew, like, the back of my hand. And just go in and really kind of, like... A game that I can kind of really sink my teeth into in terms of getting really kind of testing out the Steam Deck, kind of really not just like, oh, I'm playing Stray and I'm just playing that game because I haven't played it before. And this is the platform that I'm playing it on, where I'm purposefully playing this game to test it out on the Steam Deck that I can kind of shut my mind off and just have a good time. But I really want to play it in this format specifically. And it worked great. The only thing since I bought the Return to Arkham or the Arkham Collection, whatever you want to call it, that has the three mainline Arkham games in it, technically that Arkham Asylum isn't supported, quote unquote, but you can like download basically a new, like you could download a certain driver pack and it'll work totally fine really quick. But it's funny, Arkham City is deck verified, but that wouldn't launch for some reason. I have no idea why, but I wanted to jump into that on the plane ride back because that was an even longer flight, but ended up not really getting a chance to jump into it. But those were the two main games that really I played, and now I'm kind of in that like limbo mode of like, fuck, what do I want to play next? I kind of want to play, like, I'm in the mood to kind of sink my teeth into like competitive FPS, like a Valorant or a CS or something like that, that I kind of want to like get my fix in that regard. I then at the same time, I'm like, well, fuck, if I'm feeling an FPS, I've wanted to go back and, like, kind of work my way through some legendary playthroughs on the Halo campaigns again. I was like, I'm really feeling, like, that ODST mood right now. Maybe I could play through that. And then I was like, I also want to do, like, just a random, like, quick run in Fallout 4 again, because I wanted to try a couple different mods out. I don't know. I was all over the place in terms of what I wanted to play, but... Eventually, I'll find something. One day, I'll find something. But anywho, Mike, let's get into the episode this week. And I'll be quite honest, it is a pretty light news week. I was like looking at stuff because we're recording on Thursday this week. Looking at what I kind of wanted to talk about this week and kind of just perusing, you know, the general, you know, news outlets that we go to that most people go through to for their, you know, video game news and whatnot, you know, your IGN game spots, you know, Reset Era, things like that, that you kind of go through to just see what the sentiment is going on. And I thought it'd be a good idea to maybe instead go with more of a topical show this week. And in a non, you know, I'm definitely not stealing this from another podcast that I listened to. Definitely wasn't from a semi-recent episode of the Kind of Funny Games cast, but I thought it was a really interesting topic that they did talk about. So I figured we could use it on this one as well. And I think it fits. I think it fits our salty moods at time as well. But that is, what is your most disappointing, or what are your most disappointing, or I guess, how should I put this? What are you most disappointed in the last generation of gaming? Or really, I should say, I guess, like, you could even say this generation of gaming, too. So, really, I would say when I think of the last generation of gaming, I think of from the launch of the Xbox One to now. You know, really that almost 10-year window of, you know, what we've kind of been going off of. But I was kind of thinking about it, and there's more there than I thought. Like, because I've had, me personally, I've had a great time with games the past 10 years. Like, I've been gaming, you know, just as much as I was 10 years ago, if not more, kind of thing, now that, like, I can afford to buy more games, because being an adult, except for you have less time, which sucks, don't grow up, kids. But at the same time, though, like, the more I think about it, the more there are kind of this, like, yeah, what the fuck, man? I'm kind of disappointed on that. But I thought it'd be a good one to kind of, almost like an airing of grievances, like just lay it all out there, what we're fucking feeling. And since we've kind of been bottled up the past couple of weeks, where Mike, you and I haven't been able to get on there, I want to kick it to you, first of all. And obviously, this isn't just a one thing and done, like, you know, honorable mentions, whatever, you could throw it all out there. It's mostly just kind of digesting and kind of just yelling into the void this time around. That I want to know, what is something that in the past, you know, 9 to 10 years within gaming, specifically obviously Xbox, PC, and, you know, what we usually talk about, but what disappointed you the most?
Big pill to swallow.
Well, what have you been disappointed with? Not, I guess, just the most, but what are some of the more disappointing things you've had with gaming?
I guess in the last generation, you know, for me, with it being an Xbox-centric show, I feel like I would be remiss to not mention a game that I, you know, we always let lurk into the show regardless of what's happening in the world.
I personally don't know what you're talking about.
And, yeah, I mean, I'm going to have to say, like, you know, Halo 5 was a pretty big disappointment.
Mm-hmm.
Not even just the multiplayer and how bad that was, but the campaign was just really, you know, there's a point to which, you know, going your own direction, you can say, or trying to make your own moves inside of a space that, you know, you've kind of inherited from Bungie,
mm-hmm.
and Bungie has done a great job. You know, I can understand, you know, you're trying to kind of put your own spin on things, give it your own flavor. But 343 Industries just seems to always find a way to just, like, get in their own way for basically nothing. And what I mean by that is, like, they just try to reinvent the wheel with Halo, like, every iteration, when realistically it's not rocket science. Like, what is very successful when it comes with regards to the Halo franchise? And
mm-hmm.
I think at the end of the day, you know, it's kind of, you know, it's tough, because I think the arena shooter in the first-person shooter space is on its way out. I just don't think it's a way to really retain players or audience. You know, whenever you have skill-based matchmaking ingrained in every little bit of your game, it's just a soulless game to get on and play for hours and hours on end. And people don't want to get on and content create for a game like that, because it's just exhausting. And, yeah, that's, like, a whole thing about Halo 5 and, you know, Halo in general, and, you know, why it's pretty brutal. There's just been no development support for that game, even the new iteration, but there's just no development support. They don't listen to anyone. They just want to do things their own way and just constantly cost the fan base pretty much everything in the process, so that would be one of my games.
Yeah, and it's funny you bring up specifically Halo 5, too, because I've been on record multiple times and still stand by the statement of it. You know, I think that Halo 5's campaign isn't as bad as people make it out to be. Like, that's my probably one of my bigger hot takes in gaming. Not saying it's good. It's not a good Halo campaign, but I think people get on it to the degree that they're like, this is like some Hitler shit. Like, this is horribly bad, like, kind of shit. And I'm like, okay, it's not that bad. Like, yes, it is bad. But you're being hyperbolic, kind of thing. Like, it's not good. It's not a Halo. Like, I truly don't believe it is a good Halo game. But it's not, you know, the second coming of Satan. But at the same time, too, with that, it is hands down probably one of my most disappointing releases as well. That you look at that game and you look at the marketing leading up to this game and it's, you know, cool. It really did feel like, okay, they're finally, you know, 343 is finally kind of settling into their own a little bit where they're having this mystery built up of, okay, is Chief good? Is he bad? What's going on? And really this kind of pillar of Chief versus, fuck, what's his name? Spartan Locke. That where it's this find the truth, and they did all this like really good marketing leading up to it in terms of like, well, good in the presentation of it. They got people interested in the game of like, hey, here's this, you know, mini podcast series that is kind of like giving hints about it, and here's, you know, some really great theatrically like shot marketing and you know, trailers put to this and cinematics put out for this game, like, that really is getting you invested in, you know, what is this story with Master Chief. And you come to find out that, oh, you're only playing as Master Chief for at most a third of the game. You know, I don't mind when we split off from characters, because spoilers for Halo 2, if you haven't ever fucking played Halo 2, I guess, but you play as the Arbiter in that. And the design of that game is really interesting, and it is really thoughtful whenever you're actually going through it. Just because of, I think the narrative of Halo 2 is fascinating to begin with. Not only just the story of developing that game, but also too the crux of that game of, you're not only seeing the fallout of Halo CE from the Chief's perspective and how, you know, he's viewed as this hero now and, you know, where they go from there, but you also see it from the fall of the Covenant, or at least the failure of the Covenant through the Arbiter. And how he's, you know, starting to doubt the prophets and, you know, what, you know, what's going on with that. And you're kind of getting to actually step into your enemy's shoes and see, you know, from their perspective of, you know, they always say good villains are almost like, you know, drunk words or sober thoughts when you're drunk, when it's kind of like, you know, you hate saying it. But you kind of like, you don't like saying it and you're kind of a dick for saying it, but you kind of mean it, kind of thing. Like, it's in that regard where it's like, you think of really good villains when they're wrote, you usually tend to be like, yeah, he's a bad guy. You know, I understand that. I'm not agreeing with him on that, but I get where he's coming from. Like, I always think of Thanos in the MCU. And people love that character and that iteration of that character because, yeah, they're not saying like, yes, I believe in what he's doing, but I get it. The reason he did this was because, hey, his home, or why he's wanting to do this for other planets and other, you know, universes, is that his planet was overpopulated and, you know, food was drying up and all these things, and their planet was dying. And if he found out, you know, it was random genocide that could solve a lot of their problems. You know, and he did that. It did. It solved a lot of their problems. They were food abundant then, and there was, you know, less crime and all these things that, like, where it's like, yeah, I don't agree with that. I still wouldn't side with that choice, but it's like, I get it. I understand why. And I think that's what made that iteration of the two character system, or the multiple character system, where the player takes control of multiple characters, I should say, applicable, because you're stepping into the shoes of the Arbiter and you're seeing not only his failure, but his beliefs and his reasoning behind doing this, comparative to when you play as Locke, you're not really stepping into anything. You're stepping into somebody who is just, oh, you have no, unless you've read, unless you've watched Halo, the Halo Nightfall web series, unless you've read the 5-issue run graphic novel, unless you've read the 2 spinoff books, and I think there was something else. Oh, yeah, there was a podcast, the podcast series leading up to the game. Then you have at least applicable information on Locke going into it. You shouldn't have to do that. Like, I shouldn't have to do that for anything, let alone a video game. But more so, like, if I want to step into just getting into a main entry of a series that isn't like, hey, you should probably play the game before that if it's a sequel, not, hey, you should play the game before that, but also you should read all of this, you know, additional content to it that is outside of a couple books, a podcast run, this whole web series, like... No, you shouldn't have to do that just to understand one of the characters and what the actual fuck's going on. Like, it's just the dynamic of them, not to mention, too, whenever it's billed to, hey, this is, you're going to be playing as Chief, but you're also going to get some experience as Locke. And then you turn out to get the inverse of that of, hey, you're going to be playing as Locke for the majority of this game. You can see where some people would be a little pissed off by that and disappointed, you know, by all means. But, yeah, it's looking back on that, like, I find I want to, like, I want 343 to just knock it out of the park each time. Like, I'm still so, like, if they turned around and, you know, and well, I'm sure we'll get to Halo Infinite, too, on top of that. But, like, if we turned around and, you know, a year from now, Halo Infinite, it was in a good spot with content regularly coming up, multiple new maps every, you know, we're getting 3 new maps every, like, you know, we're getting 6 maps a year or something like that, like crazy, like that we're getting all this content. It's being regularly tuned, balanced, you know, all this stuff, reasons to invest in that system. Like that's what we want. We don't want to see, I don't want to see them fail. Like I don't, I just want the fucking series to be great. I want to get the same enjoyment that I was getting, you know, 15 years ago out of the series as I was now. Like, and I know that's, you know, just some nostalgia also bleeding into it, but there's no reason the series shouldn't, you know, at least if it needs to go in different directions with its gameplay or whatever, that's fine. But at the same time, like, there's no reason why 343 can't at least make it competent at this point. And that's what I think the biggest blow is, that you see, like, I wanted to like Halo 5 when it first came out and playing it, I'm like, the multiplayer feels good. Like me as somebody who, you know, wants to win, but is much more casual and enjoys the competitive scene more from a spectator standpoint, that I'm like, I'm having fun with this game. But then to really see it fall off and really only see support in a lot of the non-competitive factors and very much niche like game modes says a lot. Like that it's... It just was overall disappointing. Like, that's just, I don't know. Like, I'll always want to see Halo succeed, but it's given me no reason that it can't really moving forward, which sucks. But
yeah, it's basically like the curse of being a Pirates fan where people mm-hmm. are just, yeah.
A hodgepodge of nothingness, you know?
Yeah, it's just, it's disappointing.
Anyways, Mike, give me another here. What else have you been disappointed? An airing of grievances. What else has pissed you off?
Last Generation, I would say it might not be a popular sentiment for sure. But yeah, I mean, Fallout 4 was pretty disappointing to me.
Oh, all right. Let's get into it.
It's just a linear drive to nothingness with a barren feeling surrounding area of you know, like the area around your character just feels like is filled with just nothingness. They added in like the settlement stuff, which is like fine, but
in theory,
you know, there was no flavor added to that. It was like the equivalent of, you know, the soullessness that was like the quote unquote never ending quests in Skyrim, where it's
the radiant quest system. Same thing. Yeah,
it's the same thing over and over again. And it's basically the same thing with the settlement system. And outside of that, again, just a linear, like, just A to B to C to D, E to F, and completing the game. And there's little to no incentive, or there's, like, little to nothing pulling you away from just grinding straight through the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that was disappointing, because in earlier iterations of Bethesda games, they found ways to pull you out of that main quest grind.
Mm-hmm.
Was that an option for you? Absolutely. You could just focus only on playing through the main quest and doing literally nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
That was always something that you could do.
Right.
But they did a really good job in previous games at providing ways to pull you away from that monotonous just, oh, let's go do this, mm-hmm. or let's go do that, and getting through the main quest. Like, they found ways to pull you into other opportunities or other situations,
mm-hmm.
and that's just something that I felt like was completely stripped and devoid in Fallout 4, and made it feel really just blech and, you know, not that enjoyable.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny you bring that up. I feel like I'm using that phrase a lot this episode, but recently I had I saw somebody that I follow from the Kind of Funny community on Twitter post. He's like, without any spoilers, I'm playing Fallout 4 and really enjoying it. But he then follows up, but I know New Vegas is considered the best out of the series by most. Why is that? The story features, you know, yada yada, let me know. And I naturally had to obviously give my 2 cents on it. I said Fallout 4, while one of my favorite RPGs of the last decade, is much more linear of a linear experience than New Vegas. Yes, Fallout 4 still relies on player choice, but it becomes much more funneled to a set amount of outcomes compared to New Vegas's much wider breadth of branching paths. I said that's not to say Fallout 4 is a worse, like, definitive, you know, this good, this bad, you know, kind of experience. Because that direction, I said, because that direction has made Fallout 4 a much more widespread, accessible game to a much broader audience. But if you enjoy much more of an open-ended experience and more reliance on how you build your character, then New Vegas is the game for you. And I really kind of stand by that. And the more I play these games just in general, I guess the more time I grow with Bethesda games, the more I grow to love them in each individual ways and see them more as, you know, each having their own individual experiences, not just, you know, a lot of people think, hey, I'm going to play, this is the newest iteration of this series, I'm going to stick with this. And I think so many of it being, you know, us being Bethesda fans for so long, Mike, that we know what it's like, what it's been like to kind of grow with these games. We know mm-hmm. that, hey, I'm going to get a vastly different experience if I'm playing Morrowind than Oblivion. I know I'm going to get a pretty vastly different experience if I'm playing Oblivion to Skyrim. Same with Fallout 3 to New Vegas, from New Vegas to Fallout 4, from Fallout 3 to Fallout 4. Like, we're going to get vastly different experiences between these games, and it's almost to the same degree of, you hear a lot of people talk about the Soulsborne genre, quote-unquote, of, especially with From Software games, that, yes, they're all in that same kind of breath of, this is going to be an open world RPG, but it's going to be very difficult, and it's going to be very, you know, built on learning, you know, memorizing patterns of how to fight bosses and things like that. And very much you're going to be, you know, get comfortable with failure, but they're all built, or they're all designed in their own specific way, that I'm going to, like, if I'm going to play Sekiro, it's going to be a different experience than Bloodborne. It's sure, you're going to have some same skeletal structure from the basis of the game, but it's going to be vastly different, where, you know, Sekiro is more based on parrying compared to Bloodborne, which is more based on fast movement and more almost hack and slash in a way, compared to Elden Ring being a much more kind of all around, like, feeling, really, I think, truly the, like, Miyazaki was always so inspired. You hear him from the, like, from the Zelda franchise, that
mm-hmm.
I feel like that is the most akin to that as possible, where, you know, compared to the heavier feel of a Dark Souls, like, they're all have the same, you know, this kind of DNA that links them together, but it's like humans, we're all the same race, but we're individual in our own rights, and I feel like that's kind of the way of when you look at these you know, Bethesda experiences. But I agree with you. I definitely don't think, like, when I first played Fallout 4, I was just like you, that I'm used to playing Fallout 3 in New Vegas. And sure, New Vegas is even more, you know, doubles down on that idea of player choice and, you know, doing, really giving you the freedom to kind of just break the fucking game if you want to, like, truly. And granted, you can still kind of technically do that in all quote-unquote Bethesda games, even though that's an Obsidian game, but in the Fallout and Elder Scrolls franchise, you could definitely still do that, even in 4 to a degree, but it is much harder. I still, though, am, like, when I go back and play it, and I found ways, like I said, I kind of grown with these games over time, that I kind of view them and, you know, play them in my own specific way to, I think, get the most out of the games, like Fallout 4, where, yeah, I'm going to, this game wants me to go on this linear path. And sure, I get enjoyment out of the story that came out with it. Like, personally, I, you know, think it's interesting, and I think the different factions that I have the ability to side with and choose, you know, who, what I want to do and whatnot, like, I think those are interesting. But I have found more enjoyment in that, and mostly being, instead of, you know, not, you're not the lone, like, more or less, I'm playing as the Lone Wanderer. I'm playing this as Fallout 3 in a regard, where I'm kind of pushing this game in places and instead of making the game making me uncomfortable, which is good. I want to feel uncomfortable because I want to feel that, hey, I like it, almost the feeling that I had with Elden Ring, and I think why I connected with it so much. Hey, there's that point on the map that I don't know about. I just kind of want to go there. Like, I want to go and check that out. I feel like there could be something there, and if not, it looks really cool. I want to just go and see that. Where I started doing that more and more with each Fallout 4 playthrough that I do, that I'm just like, you know what? I just kind of want to stop and see everything. I want to check out these little areas that are off the beaten path, and if they're worth it. Even if the game is funneling me to go this way, like, pushing me hard, not just the, you know, navvy in your ear, hey, listen, like, you need to go, this is where you're at in the game, go do this next. Like, more so that there's times where I can't access certain things, but pushing the game hard enough, you're able to do those things. But I'm with you that still, like, it isn't the game that I wanted. It wasn't the iteration of Fallout that I, the next evolution of Fallout. It's great that it's more accessible in that regard, that, you know, almost to the same degree of Skyrim, where it's like, yeah, it's great. This game is a more linear experience. It does hold your hand a little bit more, but if that means getting more people interested in playing these games that, you know, for so long we've always beat the drum of these games, like, man, I wish more people knew about them. Well, now they're making it, you know, these games in a fashion that, you know, sure, kind of make them a little more straightforward than not, but it at least opens up that door to get more people into the franchise and maybe check out older games or maybe do that. Sure, that maybe is, you know, kind of like wishful thinking, but, you know, it at least gets them closer to those experiences than before. But I don't disagree with you at all. I still think it is, like, I still feel disappointed playing Fallout 4 in regards to what I would want out of a Fallout game. And sure, maybe that makes us boomers in the sense of, like, well, I just want New Vegas 2. Like, I just want Fallout 3 again. Like, and, you know, there's good pros and cons to that thought, but at the same time, like, I guess I'm still glad it exists because I found enjoyment out of it, and it's still gotten Bethesda games into more people's hands. But I don't disagree with you in the sense that, yes, I'm still disappointed by this fucking game. Like, I still wanted something else. but yeah, so I guess with me, something I was kind of thinking about when I was thinking about, like, what is just kind of disappointing me, because I'm very cognitive of it. I try to look at the glass half full with a lot of stuff, like, and that's very, I think, obvious. And while I'd like to think I keep it a buck still, like, I do like to try to find, like, hey, you know what? I found this to be a shortcoming in this game, but I did also find this to be something I thoroughly enjoyed with this game, or I thought was an interesting idea, or blah, 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 blah. If we're sticking with, like, Bethesda, I just think, like, when you hear people talk about the greatness of Skyrim, like, I feel like I'm more in line with your thoughts, Mike, on Skyrim or on Fallout 4. Like, that's more me with Skyrim. And I'm much more akin to, like, they say that, like, people always talk about, like, with Bethesda games, like, you may like both of them, but you really like Elder Scrolls and you just kind of like Fallout. Or you're, yeah, I like Fallout, but I love Elder Scrolls, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. I'm much more in the Elder Scrolls camp. Like, I fucking adore the Elder Scrolls. But, like, I just have a hard time going back to Skyrim each time I want to play, or each time I want to play the Elder Scrolls. Like,
yeah, I don't even bother.
Right. It's just, to me, it's just, like,
I guess you could technically include it in the past generation also, because they remake the game every fucking 6 months.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I was just the other day, I was getting a fucking notification from Steam, like, hey, one of the games on sale this week is the anniversary upgrade of Skyrim. And it's just like, yeah, I bought the fucking special edition already before that. I don't need another anniversary on top of it. Like, all it is is fucking mods that you guys have monetized from the Creation Club that really I could probably, you know, just get that creator's content on Nexus Pro or Nexus Mods a lot easier and probably in a lot more modular fashion. Like,
mm-hmm.
But I digress on that part. But just, like, comparative to, I know we talk about Oblivion a lot. Goddamn, we've talked about that game to death, and we have a whole, like, 2-hour episode special on it and whatnot.
Yeah, and there's no way that if someone who listens to our pod goes and plays Oblivion, it's never going to live up to the way we talk about it.
No, absolutely not. I mean, there's games like
it's
that.
It's one of those things where, like, I'm not trying to, like, gatekeep or be weird, but, like, it's almost like you kind of had to be there.
Oh, yeah.
You kind of had to be there, right?
Right, and I definitely agree with that. And it's almost to the same degree as, like, those are very much moment games for me. And, like, I have that still with a lot of games. But much more that I think, like, people are going to find these games more accessible down the road. Just given the, you know, the reach that technology has and the advancements we've gotten in games and, you know, the fidelity of games increasing, and, you know, these games are going to hold up a lot longer comparatively in terms of, you know, whether it's the graphics or the gameplay elements or things like that. The games now that we're playing are probably going to have a bigger shelf life than, you know, some of the games we've grown up with. And, like, Oblivion's a great example. I fucking adore Oblivion memes. Like, I adore them. Like, the fucking account the one account on YouTube, Bacon, is incredible. Like, his Oblivion videos of just kind of the derpiness that comes out of that game from its, like, Radiant AI, like, you can you can get some fucking incredible moments come out of that game. Like, just the complete, like, derpiest shit in the world. Like, and that's fine. Same with, like, the fidelity of the game. Like, trust me, I get it. It looks old. People look really shiny and look like just Play-Doh action figures at times. I get it. But, like, put yourself in 2006 playing on an Xbox 360 for, you know, one of the first games played on there, being that, like, and being a fan of Morrowind, going into, oh my god, they're making another one, you know, and seeing, you know, first getting out of the Imperial Sewer, like, at that point in time in history, like, that blew my mind. That blew your mind. Like, it just, you had to be there kind of thing. Like, I know it's not going to hold up like it does for other people now if they're jumping in and playing that. That's fine. But it is very much, like, same with, like, Morrowind, or same with, you know, Fallout 3 or whatever. Like, and I even think, too, like, granted, I think Ocarina of Time holds up better than a lot of people give it or say to. Like, there's some edgelords out there who, like, love to say, like, oh, Ocarina of Time's a bad game, you need a guide to play it, and blah, 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 blah. Like, I disagree with some of that, you know, the majority of it, but I even get it to an extent of, like, okay, there's a lot of mechanics that have not aged very well with this game, but I think that game holds up a little bit better than even, like, Oblivion or Morrowind or whatever, you know, whatever these experiences that I look at that I'm like, fuck, this was a moment in time playing this. Halo, like, that's a moment in time that I'm playing this. But you just kind of had to be there to experience those. Like, playing Diablo 1 on OG Battle.net, like going and playing originally the fucking shareware version of that, and like fucking as a 5 or 6 year old kid, whenever it was that I played that, and like just grinding through the first like act multiple times with some dude that I met on Battle.net from like Poland. Like, it was great. Like, it was just fucking fantastic as a kid. Like,
as a wee lad.
As a wee lad, you know? As a wee lad, mate. But kind of getting back onto it, like, it's not that I don't think, like, I don't think, once again, looking at Fallout 4 too, like, I don't think these games are objectively bad. Like, they're not, they're not bad. They're just not what I wanted. And that might be a crotchety old man, you know, oh, back in my day, you know, Bethesda did this, and, you know, but at the same time, too, I think as these games have become more accessible, like you said, Mike, there's more handholding, and not to the degree of, like, oh, I don't want anybody, I just want to be dropped into a world and say, you know, go at it kind of thing. Like, I do want that to a degree, but I'm not against of, like, hey, here's your, you know, here's your quest marker. Like, this is where your next quest is at. Like, that's fine if that's how people want to play. It just, it really made me with Skyrim, like, I struggled to find those moments that so many people seem to have with it compared to Oblivion or even Fallout 4, that I just don't see the moments of that I felt much more with Oblivion of, oh, you see that mountain over there? You can go to that. Or, oh, you see that? Oh, there's an interesting thing that, or shrine that's over there. I kind of just want to check that out. Where with Skyrim, they mostly led to dungeons that were kind of copy and paste. And it just, I didn't get that push. Like, I never felt that push in Skyrim. And I'll still go back and play it. And like I said, I think it's grown on me a little bit better, but not to the extent of, you know, when I want to go and play Elder Scrolls, like, I'm putting Morrowind above that. And that is, you know, a game that, to me, I still personally love because I have a lot of really great experiences with it. But I understand the hurdles that, you know, that game sets up for itself in 2022. There's very, very, very little voice acting in that game comparative to, you know, modern Western RPGs. There's, yeah, it's all text-based for the most part. It is very much a D&D style, like, each strike that you are taking or spell that you're casting is a dice roll. Like, there's a probability you're going to hit or not. It's not like, you know, in modern Bethesda games where, or just Western RPGs in general, that, hey, you see something, if your sword does hit it, that's a hit. Like, it is, hey, you're going to, you have a chance to hit or not, or hit or miss. Like, and it's a dice roll each time you click mouse one or, you know, right trigger or whatever. So I just see myself finding those experiences more just for the fact of, yes, in theory, this is the game that's being technically supported more in, you know, getting more mods for it and things like that. But like, It just seems to never, like, truly hold up that candle that, like, and I personally am still in the camp of, like, I'm not really worried about Elder Scrolls 6. Like, I think it's been, I think as of right now, I'm not, but we'll see what Skyfall does. Starfield does, and see how that game, you know, I kind of respond to that. About where we kind of see where we are with that, or where we are with Bethesda. But as of right now, I still am not like, oh man, this game's like, I'm worried about this game. Like, I think it's going to be one long enough that we've been away from the franchise, and I think we're going to have at least the tech available at that point to really kind of push the boundaries of what a lot of people are expecting that series and Western RPGs, like, I should say high fantasy Western RPGs, to be at that point.
Yeah.
But I just, each time I go back to Skyrim, while I find it, you know, a little more pleasing, it's just, it still doesn't, I still don't get that affinity that even with, like I said, Fallout 4, I find new ways to play the game that it still resonates with me a little bit more each time. I still don't get that with Skyrim. And I don't know. I don't know if I ever will. And I'm still much more of a Elder Scrolls person than Fallout. But it's just, it's tough to play that game sometimes.
Yeah, it's not that great.
Anyways, Mike, give me one more. What is another major disappointment you've had?
From last generation?
Yeah, or just, you know, this one now. Like, what are you, I guess, what are you disappointed of the past couple years? What am I not?
I can't really say Infinite because I hark on that all the time. I would say a game that I've just been... I would just give this to gaming as a whole, to be quite frank. And the reason why I say that is it's not like experiences like Elden Ring don't exist. That just come out of... They don't come out of nowhere, but like, you know, think about the type of hype that that game had coming into it. Not like it had hype, but like, you know, it hit almost 800,000 live players on Steam. Mm-hmm. And that's something.
Right.
But the live service model, you know, the way that it's been done has just not been good. I wish they would do a little bit more with it. I wish they would do it a little bit more, less of a cash grab, more of like, you know, making games better over time. But yeah, the whole gaming industry right now is a little bit brutal, to where I find myself more attracted to indie games than AAA games because I just don't want to put up with the bullshit.
No, and I agree with that, where I find myself, just for example, yesterday, I want to say, I'm pretty sure it was yesterday, I saw somebody tweet about or retweet a game that was coming out that an indie developer was making that said, in less than 24 hours, I'm releasing Neo Dash, and saying so much work over the last 2 years, but the end result makes it all worth it. So I wishlisted it instantly because it literally looks like, you know, Cruising USA, only like with over the top, like F-Zero drifting and neon, and like, it looks incredible. Like, that I'm like, this is something already that I'm looking at that is 10 times more interesting than, you know, what a lot of, you know, AAA developers are putting out, like, even, or even in like the AA space. Like, I would rather spend $15 on this and maybe get, you know, 5 hours of enjoyment out of it compared to, you know, and have something unique out there, somebody testing kind of the limits of, or testing the boundaries of what certain experiences are going through. And don't get me wrong, I love AAA games no matter what. With, there's, you know, a lot of my favorite games are AAA games, but at the end of the day, like, I'm finding, like you, much more, you know, interesting and unique experiences out of these, like, out of indie games. Like, playing through, I started playing Inside as well for the first time, and it's a game that's been out for 10 years or whatever at this point, like, but it's a game that is so unique, and it's, you know, platforming and, you know, how you're supposed to interact with, or how you can interact with that genre, that, you know, it's, I'm not getting that from other, you know, I'm not getting that from Mario. I'm not getting that from, you know, some of these games that come out that aren't necessarily pushing it. But what's, I guess, Mike, what's something that you want to see from the AAA space change that would help pull you back into that?
They'd have to go. unfortunately,
they would have to pay me.
No, unfortunately, I think it gets much, much worse before it gets better. In Diablo 4, there's nothing that I've heard about it since, you know, Diablo Immortal came out that gives me any hope that it's going to be a good game. And I think that it has to get much, much worse with the microtransaction pay-to-win bullshit than it gets better. And that's pretty fucking pathetic, because I didn't think we'd ever get to this point. But yeah, I would just have to say, like, maybe releasing full games that I don't have to pay for, like, 5-day early access. And I don't know, just releasing a full video game would be a good start.
Yeah,
because I don't know of a AAA game besides Elden Ring in the past year that actually released with full content.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you're not completely wrong, and that's like,
and they just slapped the title live service on it just to fucking, you know, just to kind of like get buy themselves time to fuck around, basically.
Yeah. And I think I've said this on shows before. I think my biggest thing with the AAA space, especially within games as a service, is that there's a difference between having a game that, like, you know, oh, we're updating this game over time, or like, hey, you're getting, we're going to give, you know, updates to this game, or there's going to be DLC or something like that. That's totally different from, I think, the mindset that a lot of publishers want out of development studios. And that's that they think live service and, hey, we're going to make some DLC for this game are interchangeable. Right. Like, almost the idea of, hey, this is a like that a remaster and a remake are interchangeable words, and they're not. Or like communism and socialism aren't interchangeable words. Like,
yeah,
where it's like, no, these are two different things. Like, if you want a live service game, that means you're getting content pumped into it nonstop over a lifespan, and not every single player game needs to do that. Like, I think Sony does a really good job at, especially with their first party single player output, that the games that they put out, sure, some of them get DLC, but they kind of stop after that. And sure, not everything can be Sony. By all means, not everybody has the, you know, every entity within games has the ability to just pump out these single player games because they know, hey, these are console exclusives. You know, our audience is going to buy this. It's, you know, we have data proving that. But that isn't to say that you look at an EA, for example, who is one of the biggest, most profitable gaming entities ever, and you see, okay, they struggle to sometimes, and lately they've been changing their tune about how they do this, but like that they're worried about, oh, we're worried about putting out this single player game because we can't find ways to, you know, give it life long term or monetize it long term, which is really what they're saying. But you look at the success of a game like Jedi Fallen Order, and that's a game that, sure, had a deluxe edition at launch that you got some, you know, cool skins or whatever, and a digital soundtrack or something like that. I can't remember, or art book, I think it was. But you got a couple of extra skins for Cal and BD-8, and, like, outside of that, though, that was it. Like, those are things, and these were things you could still unlock in the game, but you get them unlocked early. Okay, if somebody wants to do that, fine. But outside of that, that was it. The game shipped. It was boxed, done. Sure, it had a day one update or whatever, like every game does. Cool. But what you got on the disc, that was it. Like, yeah. You know, and that's refreshing to get. Like, it's okay to have definitive experiences. And I think so many development studios get unjust pressure put on them by publishers, especially these big, you know, big, large AAA publishers that say, we got to find ways to make this game, to monetize this game, to keep this game or people coming back to play this game. Like, that,
right.
We want this to be, if they play Call of Duty, Madden, and one other game a year, we want to be that one other game. We want to be their Call of Duty or Madden that this is the game they pick up and they play. Like, that's what frustrated me so much with Assassin's Creed Valhalla, and even Odyssey too, that, you know, I'm all for open world RPGs, but just to beat the main storyline shouldn't take me 50 hours. It shouldn't. Like, there's a lot of bloat put into that. And even then, okay, cool, takes me 50 hours to do that. That's great, and you're getting me a lot of content, and I can appreciate that. But at the same time too, I also know that you sell, you know, XP boosts for a single player game, and, you know, abilities to just unlock levels to pay to do that. Like, basically have for some of the old heads out there, a game genie to go and just fucking, or a game shark to go in and just, you know, automatically you're paying to have access to those. Like,
right.
And to me, that's like, you don't need these things. Like, okay, if you're worried about that, why don't you trim some of the content with that? And if you want to make it live service, why don't you have some of that content on the back end to slowly funnel in or expand the world? Like, a lot of games, you could probably trim 20% of it and it'd probably be more beneficial than anything. Like, things can just be self-contained. And I think that's, like, the biggest worry that I have moving forward into the following, like, for this gen and really moving forward, that I'm all for live service, free-to-play titles, whatever you want to call it. Like, like your Fortnites, like your Warzones, all those experiences. I personally find joy out of these experiences, but at the same time, like, I get it. Like, I also do want, like, your just standard, like, hey, give me God of War Ragnarok. Like, that's going to be just kind of an in and out experience. Give me, you know, what hopefully Starfield is coming out, that, yeah, it's going to be a very large and expansive experience, but I also know that going into a Bethesda game, that's what I want out of these open, large open world RPGs. Like, I also know it'll probably take me, you know, 20 hours or so if I want to just bare bones do the main storyline. I could do that and just mainstream the main quest line. I could do that, where there is much more gatekeeping, I think, in the third-party realm, where you see games like I keep saying Assassin's Creed, but where you're just level locked to certain areas that you can't get to unless you're pretty much that level. And, oh, but don't worry, you could buy levels with that. And it's like, not everything needs to be monetized in that regard. Like, you just make a game and box it up and say, boom, here you go, and actually be what it wants to be comparative to what an executive wants it to be. I don't know. These are just firing from the hip on this one, but anywho. Mike, do you have any more grievances you want to air, or you want to call it a wrap on the episode?
No, that's kind of all I have to say about it.
Got enough off your chest. Anywho, I think that was a good airing of grievances for us. We'll leave it at that. But Mike, in general though, where can people find you on the internet? Talk about everything we talked about today, all of the grievances, said grievances that we aired with the video game industry and the games we play. Where can people find you online? Talk about it.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at TOYSXLDIER, or you can find me on Twitch at MP_ToySoldier.
Nice, nice. And as always, I'm your host, Travis White, a.k.a. Travelus, on most internet platforms, including at Travelus_ on Twitter. That's TRAVLESS_. You'd also find me streaming time to time on Twitch.tv/Travelus_, same as Twitter. And if you want to play some video games with me, you can do so at just regular old Travelus on Xbox Live, Steam, whatever platform you have. That's probably where you're going to find me. And that's TRAVLESS_. And this, ladies and gentlemen, has been your newest episode of the Game Pass Gamecast, your weekly go-to podcast for all things Xbox, Xbox Game Pass, and of course, PC gaming, including news, rumors, and conversation around them damn good video games. You can catch new episodes of the show when they drop each and every Friday morning on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, and all other major podcast services. So be sure to subscribe to us, rate, review us, interact with us in any way possible with these. It does help. The metrics do work. And follow us on Twitter at GPGCPodcast to stay up to date with everything regarding the show, video games like, and our dope giveaways. And Mike, with that being said, that is our first airing of grievances that we've had in a while, and that's going to be it for our episode. Thank you everyone so much for listening, sharing, and being a part of our growing community. Game on, wash your hands, listen to the doctors, Black Lives Matter, and we will see you next one.